Love coming to preach at Bethel. I always get a little chuckle when Brother Larry, I appreciated that introduction. When he says something like, our regular preacher or our normal preacher is Jimmy Clark. You know, what does that mean exactly? If you have listened to Jimmy, do you think he's normal? You think he's a normal preacher? Well, I don't know. I'm not sure that I'm less normal. Okay, well, anyway, the normal preacher is not here. So what does that make me? I'm the abnormal preacher, the irregular preacher today. So a couple years ago, actually it was back in 99, a couple of psychologists did a little video that they said this is on selective attention. Simons and Chabris, that's their last names. It's now probably the most famous psychological video that's ever been put out. It's 45 seconds. It's really fun to watch, really easy to get into. You might have seen it if somebody sent you an email and had the web address to the video. That's what happened to me, I'm going to say, maybe 15 years ago. Somebody sent this little video to me, and when the video pops up, you hear a voice in the background, and it says something like this. Count the times people in white t-shirts pass the basketball. That's what you're supposed to do, this 45 seconds. There are about three people in black t-shirts, three people in white t-shirts, and they're moving around in a circle, and they're passing a basketball. Now, your goal, your mission, should you decide to accept it, is to count how many times people in white t-shirts pass the basketball. And so you're intently focused on this video trying to make sure that happens. And that's what you do. They start passing the basketball, and you watch, and you count, and you try to keep up as best as you can, and you get to the end. And it says, if you counted 14, you are right. And it's not hard to count 14, so you think, yes, I did it. I am a genius. I'm one of the top 1% of these people that was able to selectively put my attention to this video and count exactly how many times the basketball was passed by those people in white t-shirts. But then, a few seconds after it says 14, it then says, did you see the gorilla? And you think, well, I don't know if you do, but out of every 100 people who watch the video, 50% of them think. Can you throw that up on the screen? Look at David is a step ahead of me every single time. All right, right here. Now, do you see that gorilla? Right there in the middle that's walking off? Okay. Now, it says, did you see the gorilla? A gorilla starts on this side of the video. It would actually be on that side on the video. Walks through in a gorilla suit, faces the camera, beats his chest in a gorilla focus. But guess what? Out of that video, the gorilla right there standing right in the middle, 50% of the people who are watching never see the gorilla. They're too busy watching the basketball. The most obvious thing in the entirety of the video is lost on half of the people who watch it. Do you know why? It's because they're distracted. You see, they think that the selective attention is supposed to be on the basketball passing, but what really is happening is a study of if you see the whole picture. And most of us, well, at least half of us in this particular video, and I would suggest many of us in real life, miss the gorilla. We miss the big picture. And let me show you what I mean by that. I want you to turn your Bibles to Luke chapter 13. And we're going to read a story that is probably very familiar to you. I'm not saying you could quote the story, but I dare say if someone were to ask you some multiple choice questions on it, you could probably get them right. You know it. It's a story found there in verse 10. Luke chapter 13. Now, Jesus was teaching in one of the synagogues on the Sabbath. Luke 13, 10. And behold, there was a woman who had a spirit of infirmity 18 years and was bent over and could in no way raise herself up. But when Jesus saw her, he called to her and said, woman, you are loosed from your infirmity. And he laid his hands on her, and immediately she was made straight and glorified God. But the ruler of the synagogue answered with indignation because Jesus had healed on the Sabbath. And he said to the crowd, there are 6 days on which men ought to work. Therefore, come and be healed on them and not on the Sabbath day. The Lord then answered him and said, hypocrite, does not each of you on the Sabbath loose his donkey or his ox from the stall and lead it away to water? So ought not this woman, being a daughter of Abraham, whom Satan has bound, think of it, for 18 years, be loosed from this bond on the Sabbath? And when he had said these things, all his adversaries were put to shame, and all the multitude rejoiced for all the glorious things that were done by him. Now that's the story. It's going to be the focus of our attention. Do you know what the word splagnesimi means? I mean, you should. This is a pretty standard word. Most of you have probably studied splagnesimi. It sounds like spaghetti, but no, of course, you shouldn't know that because it's a Greek word that you would probably not have any idea, probably never heard it. I always think it's a kind of humorous word, like I said, because it sounds like spaghetti, but splagnesimi is the word that is translated in your English New Testament as compassion. Splagnesimi. But if you were to see it in the original language and understand the definition, it's a weird way to say compassion. Here's what the word actually means. A movement in the deepest part of your intestines. So in some of the old King James, you will read something about the bowels of compassion. That's weird, isn't it? A movement in the deepest part of your intestines, and that's the word that is used when Jesus sees a multitude and they've been with him for 3 days and they haven't had anything to eat and he has compassion on them. And if you were to read it, a movement in the deepest part of his intestines. You think, well, why in the world would anybody say anything like that when you mean care and concern for someone? Well, I think someone 200 years from now, 300 years from now, looking back at 21st century English might have the same problem. When you see a person that you are concerned about or you feel a certain way about, that maybe they are in trouble, maybe they are hurt, sometimes don't you say that my heart just broke for that person? Well, hold on just a second. What is your heart? You're talking about the double fist sized organ in your chest cavity that pumps your blood? Why would you say your heart just broke for someone? Or when you see someone that is maybe starving or doesn't have food and they're in a tough situation, you would say, my heart went out to that person. Wow. That's going to be problematic for you, isn't it? If your heart goes out to that person, you're going to probably need that back if you're going to. Why in the world would we use a word that says heart, talking about an internal organ of ours? Now, of course, we understand what that means. Heart has a double meaning. It means the seat of our deepest feelings and concern. And that's what the Greek is trying to nail down with that splagnesimi. The feeling internally that you almost can't even put into words. You know, that feeling when you see a picture of a starving child, and if someone were to say, how does that make you feel? You don't even know how to explain it. It's just a deep internal care and concern that is almost impossible to verbalize. Just, oh, you just want to help when your child comes in from playing outside and your child has fallen off of his bike or her bike and her knee is all scraped up and there's gravel all in it and something inside of you just hurts for that. Just goes out to that. It's hard to put into words. It's just a deep feeling. It's compassion. Splagnesimi. It's thinking about the other person's situation. And it's what Jesus always did. And it's what many of us fail to do so often. And so, we're going to ask ourselves, where is our attention in our lives? Many years ago, I remember being invited to speak at a certain congregation, and it was about 3 hours from my house, and I got in my car. It was an evening. It was Wednesday evening, and services started at 7 o'clock, and when I got in my car, from the moment I got in my car, it was torrential downpour. And when I say torrential, it wasn't just the standard rain. It was the kind of rain that you can hardly see in front of you, that your windshield wipers are going as fast as they can possibly go. The people in front of you all have their emergency blinker lights on, and you can still barely see them. Several people have pulled off on the side of the road because they feel like it's too dangerous even to drive in this type of downpour type weather. I normally leave early so I can get there 30 to 45 minutes early. Okay, I show up basically on the steps of the congregation with 5 minutes to go. 6:55. Now, Brother Larry was looking around like, I wonder where our preacher is. Okay, that's what the whole congregation was doing. 5 minutes to go, 7 o'clock, they've called me to speak. I am not there yet. I have been for the last 3 hours white knuckle clutching my steering wheel, wondering if I am going to literally make it to the building. I get out and walk from my car to the front door and am soaking wet in the 1 minute, 28 seconds it took me to get from my car to the door. I walk in. The guy says, shakes my hand. The first thing out of his mouth is, you know, we like our speakers to be here about 15, 20 minutes early. Me too. That's how I like to arrive. But tonight, I didn't. Do you know why I didn't arrive 15 to 20? No, you don't. You know why you don't know why I'm only 5 minutes early and I almost didn't even get here? Because you didn't ask. You didn't even stop to think. No, in your mind, you have a way that things should play out. And when things don't play out that way, you want to know, well, how can we adjust this situation? Well, what's going on here? Why didn't it happen like I wanted it to? But you never thought to ask, hey, what happened with you on the way up here? Now, had this person stopped to ask what happened with me on the way up here, I might have told him, I'm lucky to be alive. I'm glad that I'm here. I think providentially the Lord preserved me to be here and speak, but I only got here 5 minutes. But he didn't care about that. He just thought, hey, normally our speaker's here 30 minutes early, and you're not. You got a problem. You think, I can't believe people would do that. Really? You can't believe people would do that. You ever go into the bank and cash a check and never look into the face of the person who hands you the money? And never think about what that person has done today? Never think about what that person's going home to? Never think about the situation in that person's life, about if they are married, how's their marriage going, if they have children, what's going on in their life with children? You're there to make a transaction, aren't you? You're there to give that person a check. That person gives you the money. You walk out, and that's what you're expecting. And then sometimes you're involved in a transaction like that, and the person doesn't, well, they just don't meet your expectations. There's something about the transaction that you just don't like. Maybe they're distracted. Maybe they get a number wrong. Maybe they were supposed to put it in one account and they put it in another account. And what you see there is a problem, a challenge. Hey, this was supposed to... You know, maybe they're distracted because they just lost their mother to cancer. Maybe they're distracted because their husband just walked in the night before and said, I'm leaving. Maybe they're distracted because they have a serious something going on, but in the course of the interaction, all you see is what you expected to happen and didn't happen. Does that happen to you? You know, here's what happens in our lives. We are watching many times the basketball. Oh, it's being thrown back and forth, and the basketball is, it's your kids' grades. It's your job. Your car needs the oil changed. If you're going to go on this vacation, you got to call 2 or 3 months in advance to get this house that you're going to be staying in. I need a new outfit for the interview, the retirement account looks like it's gone down, and so we need to see what we're going to do to that. What am I going to do about retirement or Social Security? Am I going to take it to 62 or wait till 65? We have all these things that are going on around us. And lots of times we forget the big picture. And Jesus shows us what the big picture is. There's a man by the name of Brent Carter. Brent Carter in 1993 took probably the most famous picture that's ever been taken in the history of photography. He took a picture of a starving little girl in the Sudan. Here's what's interesting about this particular picture. This little girl is literally crawling to a relief station. She doesn't have the energy to stand up and walk to it. She is starving to death. You can count every single one of her ribs. She is drastically and dramatically malnourished. Now, Brent Carter was sent into the Sudan to take pictures of what the famine was doing there. And that was his mission. That was his goal. That's what he was scheduled to do. And so he heard a whimpering out in the bush, and he went out there and he saw this little girl. But when he got there, a buzzard had landed right behind her. You see the implication of that. The buzzard had landed because this life form in the buzzard's mind was so close to death, it was just a matter of a few minutes. Well, Carter, wanting to get the best picture possible, waits patiently for over 20 minutes, hoping that the buzzard will open its wings so that the picture will be of the young girl in the foreground crawling to the relief station, starving, and in the background there's a buzzard with outspread wings. Waits 20 minutes. The buzzard never opens its wings, and so he snaps the picture anyway. The call is made for him to leave and get back on the plane, and he does. What's he missing? You see, he was there to take a picture. That was his assignment. You're photographing things. But he missed the big picture, didn't he? The big picture was that there was a little girl who was starving to death and could not even stand up, and he could have picked her up and taken her to the relief station, but he didn't. Because that wasn't his job. That wasn't what he was looking at. That's not what he was there to do. Or was it? You see, really, that is what he was there to do. In fact, that's what every single one of us is here to do, is to recognize our responsibility to people. But that's what he missed. In fact, tragically, very, very tragically, within a year of that picture being taken, he won the Pulitzer Prize for that picture. But within a year of that, Carter committed suicide. And the people who were involved in that believe and attribute some of that to the guilt and the pain he suffered from having the opportunity there to help that young girl and not doing it. Later, he saw the big picture apparently, but he didn't at the time. Are you seeing the big picture? Why you're really here? It's not to have a good job. It's not to make sure that your dress fits right on Sunday so people can think you're well put together. Not to make sure that your suit is stylish enough so people think you're sufficiently successful. You're here to see God first, and through God, see people. Now, let's go back to our story there in Luke chapter 13. This woman comes in. It's synagogue. Worship on a Sabbath. Looks like everything is bustling and hustling around on the synagogue worship. To me, in my mind, it looks like they're just getting started. People are walking around. There's stuff going on. You guys have a little slide that I think is pretty neat. It says, that means hush, y'all, and it's about time to start. You got that slide up there? Come on. Where you at, David? Let's see. 5, 4, 3, 2... That other slide means y'all hush, we're fitting to start. Okay, that's what it looks like is going on. Thank you. Got it before one. You guys, I'll tell you what, your audio-visual guys are about as top-notch as there is. But Everything's going on. And this woman comes in. And this woman is bent over. You ever thought about what that means? Bent over. Maybe you have seen a person, I have, a time or two, not very much. It's rare. But a person that is so bent over that the text specifically says she can't raise herself. This is not that periodically she can raise up and stretch. This is that she is perpetually bent over. And so she comes in to the synagogue. What does she have to do to get through the crowd? How do you get through a crowd when you can't make eye contact and you're bent over? What do you see every day when you're bent over? Now, several years ago, I was sitting in a chair at my house right in front of my computer, and I sneezed. Nothing too profound about that, except for some reason, this time when I sneezed, I don't know if this has ever happened to any of you guys. It probably wasn't a sneeze. In fact, I don't think I've talked to anybody else that a sneeze did this to them, but I blew my lower back out when I sneezed. That I think that's why they say bless you when you sneeze, because stuff like that can happen with a sneeze, especially if you're trying to hold it in. But I sneezed, blew my lower back out. Now, here's what I mean by blew my lower back out. Something happened in one of the discs in my lower back that after I sneezed, I could not get out of the chair. I was bent over and I could not raise up. I barely could flop myself over onto my tile floor in my kitchen and laid there for about 45 minutes before I could even move. Now, for the next about 2 weeks, of course, I was shuffling myself in to the chiropractor. I couldn't do anything that I normally did. It was horrendously painful and really messed up the way I normally do things. For about 2 weeks, pain lasted up to it for about a month. I had to change the way I did everything. Had to change the way I sat down at the dinner table. Had to change the way I drove. I changed everything. And it was real nerve-wracking. For 2 weeks. You ever had something that put you out for 2 weeks? Maybe you had knee surgery and your leg had to be straight the whole time for 2 weeks. Maybe you had back surgery. Maybe you had the flu for a week and you thought, this is nerve-wracking. I wish this would just go on. What about 18 years? What about you being in a situation that alters your life and puts you in a category of people that cannot look another person in the face in any type of normal interaction? That all day long what you see are feet and dirt and the ground, and when you go to the marketplace, if you ever do, the way that you have to buy something is position yourself in the right way so you can look up sideways at them. You don't eat like normal people because you can't go to a table and sit down like everybody else or recline like everybody else because your back's not straight and it's not going to get straight. And it's been that way not for 3 months, not for 18 months. It's been that way for 18 years. And Jesus puts his hand on this woman and says, be healed. She rises up for the first time in 18 years. Can you imagine how thrilled she was? How elated, how excited. She probably stood up and stretched and looked around and was looking people in the eye and thought, my life is completely changed. And as she's thinking something like that, this distracted synagogue worship leader stands up. I can just see him getting real official. And I'll tell you, you ever been in a sermon where somebody's getting preached at through the sermon and everybody in there knows it and there's just some real tension in the air? Like you could cut it with a knife. It's kind of like that old illustration where the preacher stands up and he starts preaching a sermon. He says, today I'm going to preach a sermon on adultery, something that everybody needs to avoid. And he goes into a fiery sermon on adultery and he gets down to the conclusion and he says, and there are some of you sitting in this auditorium today who are guilty of it. And there's only one guy in the auditorium that morning. You know, it gets real personal that way, doesn't it? When there's one person sitting in the pews and the preacher says, some of you are guilty of that. Well, you know, everybody knew what was going on in that synagogue. I imagine that that synagogue ruler wouldn't even look over at Jesus. I imagine that he got his real pompous official look to him and said, "There are 6 days in which you can come and be healed. People can do work. Come and be healed on those, but not the Sabbath." Might have cut his eyes over there at the end, you know. And then Jesus did something probably the Jewish people never had seen in their life. He looked at the synagogue ruler to answer him and said, "Hypocrite." I would suggest he probably said it with some passion in his voice. I doubt he said, "Hypocrite." I would say he announced to the synagogue worshipers that this guy's got something wrong. "Hypocrite!" You think that got everybody's attention in the synagogue? You think they were looking up now? You think they were paying attention? You think if they had dozed off or if they were thinking about what they were going to buy after worship, you think things had come to a standstill and they were really in tune to this interaction going on between Jesus and the synagogue ruler? Oh, you know they were. Tension probably was covering them like a cloud. And he said, "Which of you doesn't take their oxen or their donkey out to get it water on Sabbath? Don't all of you do that?" And the people in the synagogue, most of them were agricultural, and they all thought, "Yeah, I'd do that." And then he said, "Now what about this woman, this daughter of Abraham, whom Satan has bound?" Now look at that next statement. "Think of it. For 18 years. You know what you did not do, Mr. Synagogue ruler? You didn't think one thing about this woman. You never thought about this woman. You thought about your regulations. You thought about the rules that you Pharisees have made up about what's supposed to happen in a synagogue worship service. But you never once thought about this woman. Because that's what she is. She's a person. And you have missed the entire point of a relationship with God as it relates to your relationship with people. You're not dealing with people. You're counting basketballs and you're missing the gorilla. Because you're not treating people like people." And isn't that what Jesus came to show us? The compassion. Jesus doesn't take photographs of starving people. Jesus goes and picks them up and gives them something to eat. Jesus doesn't walk into synagogue worship and look at how stuff should go without seeing who is there and what they're going through. Jesus doesn't walk into a bank to get his check cashed and worry about the wrong account more than about what the teller is going through in her life. He's all about the people. I have been convinced from my reading of the Bible that if I were the only person in the world who had ever sinned and needed a Savior, Jesus Christ would have come and he would have died on that cross for me. Just me. Not 7.5 billion. He would have died for Kyle Butt. Because Jesus cares about people. But not just about people. You see, if you were in that synagogue and Jesus happened to interact with you, he would treat you like a person. That's what he does this morning. He gives you an invitation. "Come and follow me, all you who are weak and heavy laden, and I will give you rest. Take my yoke upon you and learn of me, for I am meek and lowly of heart." But because he loves you, he explains what he's done for you. He died on the cross for you. He was buried, he rose from the grave, the gospel in a nutshell. But because he understands you are a person, Your Creator never makes you do anything. He says, I'm going to give you the invitation to be a part of my family. You can repent, be baptized, and be added to the Lord's church by being baptized into Christ. But you don't have to. But you can, and I'd love for you to, because I care about you. Because you're one of my people. Is there something you need to do to get right with your Creator? Is there something you need to do to have a better outlook on God's world and recognize people as people? If you need to respond to the Lord's invitation, I hope you will, as we stand and as we sing.